The Word of Mouth podcast from NHPR is made possible with support from you, our subscribers, and from
Heinemann, a provider of resources written by real teachers for real classrooms. Heinemann values teachers as decision makers and students as curious learners. Discover the path to lifelong professional learning at Heinemann.com. Heinemann, dedicated to teachers.
Robert Garova is one of our newest reporters here at New Hampshire Public Radio. He's a general assignment reporter, and he also covers demographics. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
So when did you come here?
So I got here the end of January.
Where'd you come from?
California.
California. Had you ever heard of the Free State Project when you came to New Hampshire?
It's one of those things where you feel like you've read an article somewhere, but then when you actually get into it, you know almost nothing about it.
So you took the plunge. You went to the Free State Project's Liberty Forum.
Right. It was at the downtown Manchester Hotel. Yeah, it was my first week of work, Friday my first week. I found a lot of different people talking about a lot of different things. There were panels on things like aquaponics, podcasting. There was a speaker from the American Civil Liberties Union. There were talks on cryptocurrency. The schedule, like looking up the schedule before I actually went, was not helping me figure out what this thing was. Turns out, though, when I got there, I really wasn't alone. I ran into this guy. He's a filmmaker in New Hampshire, out of Portsmouth, actually. His name's Michael Venn.
So just as the guy who was here to kind of film it and cover it, it was a huge like learning process of what it is specifically, that it's not specifically anything in a weird way.
So, but it turns out that Vin actually had a connection to the Free State Project that he didn't even know about. He ran into his neighbor, Tom Hudson, who was actually giving a talk at the Liberty Forum.
Had no idea. Got the gig doing this and then found out that a guy that lives essentially a house away through my backyard is here a featured speaker.
Tom, how do you feel about that?
They had no clue that I was here. Not that I was being subversive. It was just, you know, I don't think... You know, once you get here, I don't think you have to identify yourself as, hey, I'm a Free State Project member. It's so much more than that. We all aren't wearing tinfoil hats and scaring all the natives.
Walking away from there, did you feel like you had a better sense of what the Free State Project is?
Honestly, no.
I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth. Your questions answered, your state explored. Today, as part of our Only in New Hampshire series, we're dedicating the entire show to a question sent in by a listener named Aaron, who asked, what exactly is the Free State Project? Well, that is a question that can mystify even long-term residents of the state. We put producer Taylor Quimby on the case.
On its face, the Free State Project is pretty simple. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to moving self-described liberty activists to New Hampshire. But in practice, the way we talk about and understand the Free State Project, it's a lot more complicated. Because in addition to being a nonprofit, it's also a political and cultural experiment. And figuring out what liberty and freedom means to the people involved, that's a lot harder to pin down. So let's start with Jason.
I was in sixth grade, and I was young for my grade and small for my age.
Jason Sorens is the founder of the Free State Project. He keeps his hands clasped in front of him while he talks. Kind of like he's waiting to say grace at Thanksgiving dinner.
I got kind of picked on a lot. And one day I got pushed down into the pavement by this kid who ran up behind me. And it chipped my tooth. And we went to the principal's office. And the principal forced me to sign a confession saying that I had kicked this guy.
To be clear, Jason says he was the one being bullied, but he signed the confession anyway. He found out later the kid's mom was on the school board.
And so there was sort of that introduced me to this idea of, oh, there's politics here and there are people who will use power and abuse power. That may have primed me for that kind of skepticism about people in authority.
Jason doesn't look so much like a revolutionary as he does a young IRS auditor. He's just over 40, a lecturer in government at Dartmouth College, but could pass as a student. And Jason is what you'd call a small-L libertarian, or as many in the movement prefer, a liberty activist. Libertarianism, by the way, blends small government fiscal conservatism, think free trade, low taxes, with socially liberal policies like gun rights, fewer drug laws, and yes to gay marriage. As a PhD student in political science at Yale, Jason had been watching the Big L libertarians, the Libertarian Party, and he wasn't impressed.
Hard to imagine life without the IRS, isn't it? I'm Harry Brown.
The party had just run Harry Brown in the 2000 election, and the results had been so dismal that he wasn't even being accused of spoiling the election, like Ralph Nader. In 2001, Jason decided it was time to shift strategy, and he published an essay bluntly titled Announcement, The Free State Project.
It was almost a eureka moment. I was working on my dissertation on secessionist movements in Western democracies like Catalonians.
Jason proposed a mass migration, a voluntary resettlement of 20,000 libertarians, anarchists, anarcho-capitalists, pacifists, even freedom-loving Democrats and Republicans. A grand coalition of folks from all across the liberty-minded ideological spectrum to a single low-population state where they'd have the electoral power to transform it from the inside.
And it kind of went from there and evolved from there.
Certainly, there will be inconveniences, he wrote, like a general. Our forefathers bled and died because of the stamp tax. The Free State Project requires nothing of that kind, and the stakes are so much higher. Whether the stakes really were higher than just prior to the American Revolution is a point worth debating, but it was an inspirational moment in an otherwise fairly academic piece of writing. The essay is mathematical. It's wonky. So much so, it makes a radical argument sound almost blasé.
You know, I mentioned the idea, oh, maybe we could threaten to secede in order to get more autonomy, because this is what I was working on, and I had seen that this actually can work in other countries. And I wouldn't do that today. I think it's an off-putting idea to a lot of people, and I found that very early on, actually.
But it is undeniable. The Free State Project's founding document is all about secession. The Libertarian Enterprise, the online journal where Jason published his announcement, has the words, "Let's secede," in red cursive letters at the top of the webpage. A quick aside, if the Libertarian Enterprise sounds like a spaceship, it's probably not an accident. The founder has published three books about Lando Calrissian, the administrator of Cloud City from Star Wars. He's also, in my opinion, the most creative writer of insults since Shakespeare.
The fact is, these stumbling louts and the office-squatting, axe-grinding politicos behind them, these arrogant, bloated tax vacuums, bottom-feeding socio-babbler, morally disadvantaged mouth-breathers, but stupid social parasite, whimpering cop-suckers, have been polluting my radio station.
That was cop suckers, by the way, in case your ears just perked up. Anyway, Jason, with his tweety mannerisms and professorial tone, is no such mudslinger. So in the days after the essay went out, I imagine he found himself equal parts excited and overwhelmed as a rambunctious band of frustrated libertarians started contacting him about the fledgling Free State Project, many of them very excited about the idea of declaring independence.
It was very fast. Within 2 weeks, about 200 people emailed me saying that they wanted to participate. We set up something called a Yahoo Club. they exist at the time. It's now a Yahoo group. It's been converted. You can still see it online. And we got together and we started hashing out the details.
There have been other attempts to establish libertarian utopias, schemes involving the takeover of remote islands or disputed borderlands. Jason wasn't having any of it. He knew that if the Free State Project was going to be successful, it needed a lot of people to sign on. And rational people weren't going to sign up unless they knew others were willing to make the move too. So he came up with the idea of a pledge, a sort of voluntary contract, not unlike the challenges you hear during public radio fund drives. Signers would promise to relocate in pursuit of libertarian ideals, but wouldn't be obligated to fulfill that promise until all 20,000 spots were filled. Still, getting the group to agree on the exact language of this pledge, and virtually anything else, wasn't easy. I dug up the Yahoo messages that Jason talked about and discovered that within 24 hours of its inception, major disagreements were already starting to pop up. User JohnnyMagic2001 says the FSP should back up their secession language with the threat of military force. Jason, ever the diplomat, says secession would have to be electoral. No state could withstand the feds should things go south. If I were single, he writes, I might be willing to risk life and limb, but my wife would never agree to this thing if she thought violence might be involved. Semicolon dash parentheses, he adds, the pre-smart version of a winky emoji. About a week after launching the Yahoo group, Jason published a follow-up to his original essay. He emphasizes secession may have been a mistake. It's a tool to lower federal intervention, he says, one of many, and not necessarily the end game.
I'm against it, and even then, I was only interested in it as a potential piece of leverage.
Since then, Jason has turned even more fully away from the secession idea in both his rhetoric and his research. It could be that he was worried about the tenor of the group. After all, freedom is a big tent, one that might attract, say, midwives who are looking for freedom from stringent licensing requirements, or attract people who want the freedom to discriminate. Early on, Jason made a hard rule: no advocating violence or bigotry. But wading through these messages, it was pretty easy to find conversations that towed the line, and some that by today's standards, step right across it.
You mentioned the Yahoo group the first time that we talked, the group chat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little surprised that you mention it, because I gotta say there's some really cringy stuff looking back there.
I suppose there is. I don't know. I haven't looked at it in a long time.
One of the early leaders of the Yahoo group page was a guy named Robert Vroman. I plan to pitch this idea to Confederate loyalists and such, provided they're not neo-Nazis on the side, he writes in one thread about whether or not Hispanic Americans are pro-liberty. You forget how big a number 20,000 is. We need members. I told Jason about the thread.
I mean, I would say we never had white separatists in the FSP. That would run afoul of our policy. So, I think Robert was expressing his viewpoint, but that certainly wasn't really a part of the FSP.
Do you have any sense of how many people that were just in that initial few hundred, you know, are still with the group?
So there are a handful of people, but I would actually say the large majority of those who were in the initial discussion are no longer active in any way.
After about a month of debate and a few polls of the Yahoo group, the language of the pledge had been finalized. They had agreed on a vague, widely interpretable paragraph. Within 5 years of hitting the 20,000 signatures, Free Staters would, quote, exert the fullest practical effort towards the creation of a society in which the maximum role of civil government is the protection of individuals' life, liberty, and property. So what exactly did it mean? Well, that was up to whoever signed on the dotted line. So how did the Free State Project wind up in New Hampshire? It took a couple of years for the story to gain a lot of traction. Jason had made the pledge public just a week before 9/11, and the surge of nationalism that came afterwards took a toll.
A few people withdrew and said, we need to give all our support to the U.S. government. You know, I'm not a libertarian anymore because terrorism.
But by 2003, they had their first 5,000 signatures, and they were ready to vote on a state. New Hampshire was an early contender for lots of reasons. We have no income or sales tax, lack seatbelt and helmet laws, and the most libertarian state motto in the nation, live free or die. Plus, we have a gigantic legislature and a history of small town politics that makes campaigning accessible and relatively cheap. Maybe the biggest reason New Hampshire was on the short list is because it was already home to the biggest portion of people to sign the pledge. A local faction even tried to lobby the rest of the FSP by throwing a laid-back campground meet-and-greet they called Escape to New Hampshire. Dan Barrick is the news director at NHPR, but back in the early 2000s, he was working as a reporter at the Concord Monitor and was assigned to the story.
It was very scrappy. I don't think there was more than maybe 30 or 40 people there. But I mean, to be honest, I was actually impressed pretty early on from there was a degree of organization and structure and also just the personal commitment.
And to tip the scales towards the Granite State, then New Hampshire Governor Craig Benson said he'd personally welcome a libertarian wave. He even publicly flirted with the idea of signing on. By the time they held the vote, Wyoming couldn't measure up. Alaska hardly stood a chance. Delaware? I don't think so.
It was like a conference room in a not terribly distinguished hotel right off of Times Square in New York City. There was, you know, kind of like a sealed ballot, kind of Academy Awards, sealed envelope kind of thing.
The envelope was opened and fate was sealed. New Hampshire would be home of the Free State Project.
To be frank, it was like, oh, these people are kind of weird. Let's just write some interesting stories. I think if you were to say 15 years later, the Free State Project would still be a known thing in New Hampshire. I would have been shocked at the time.
Coming up, the Free State Project's angsty adolescent years and the growing tension between being free and managing a brand. That's when Word of Mouth continues after a short break. Welcome back to Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott. Today we're answering a question posed to Only in New Hampshire. What is the Free State Project? In the first part of the show, producer Taylor Quimby took us back to the origins of the Free State Project, or FSP. Now he'll explore how it evolved as a political and social movement, which is a complicated story given the multiple agendas among FSP supporters and their respective definitions of freedom. Taylor Quimby picks it up from here.
By 2003, when the Free State Project voted to move to New Hampshire, they'd only gotten a quarter of the 20,000 signatures they were hoping for. But they were attracting a new brand of activist, people like Carla Garrick.
You know, having grown up in South Africa in a police state, like in the heyday and the bad days, and I was lucky, I'm white, right? But I mean,
it's not hard to imagine why Carla might have grown up distrusting the government. She went to an all-girls boarding school not far from Johannesburg. One day, the cops showed up.
And they came in and they detonated firebombs and told us there was a terrorist attack. And then afterwards, they were like, yeah, that was a drill. And I mean, I was like 11 and I didn't know it was a drill. Like, I was traumatized by that experience.
Carla has a presence. She's funky. You get the impression that if you were out to dinner, she'd be the woman sitting at a nearby table having more fun than you.
Okay, I'm actually loud.
Oh, are
they
you?
They say. I don't know. I have clarity of voice.
You know, it's the laughing. Carla moved to California with her boyfriend in her early 20s and spent the next few years working as a lawyer during the dot-com boom. These days, Carla's running for state senate as a Republican, and we'll come back to that later. But one reason I found her so fascinating is that on the surface, it seems like she actually has much more in common with Democrats than she does with Republicans.
Where did the anti-war activists go when Obama got elected? I mean, that broke my heart. You know, I felt like I'd built a really good alliance with a lot of people when, you know, Bush was in power. And, you know, this is the thing, like, we actually think Bush and Obama and Trump and Clinton are all equally bad.
Carla signed the Free State Pledge in 2003 when she was backpacking through Nepal. Meanwhile, members of the Free State Project were starting to move to New Hampshire, even before the mass migration of the pledge was officially triggered. And the organization, now with a board and a place to focus their efforts, decided to take the Escape to New Hampshire idea and turn it into an official sponsored event. They called it the Porcupine Freedom Festival, or Porkfest. It's a week-long libertarian party that's held at Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And for a lot of people, it's their first introduction to the Free State Project.
I mean, the first Porkfest I ever came to, which was probably 2006, there were maybe 100, 120 people. I would say the majority were older gentlemen with long white beards who were open carrying guns. This was something that was entirely new and foreign to me.
Carla says that Porkfest wasn't quite her speed, and it happened to coincide with World Cup soccer.
And my husband, you know, would go to very dry economic talks, and I was like, you know what, I'm just going to go to the hotel and watch some soccer.
But she must have gotten something out of it, because after she finished her MFA, Carla moved to the state, and she took over organizing the festival. Not long after, Porkfest started to look a little less country and cargo pants, and a little more country and EDM.
Right now, I reside in Rochester, New York.
But sorry to hear that.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible, but eventually I'll wind up here, that's for sure.
There were campfires, dance parties, lots of pot, sure, and more podcasters than a public radio conference.
So now Doobie is making the rifle safe before demonstrating how he draws his sword.
It's not going to be pretty, I'll tell you that.
8 years of President Bush had brought a lot more color to the liberty movement. There had been the Patriot Act, WMDs, Guantanamo. Everybody had their own reason to challenge the authority of the state.
So I think a lot of times there's one thing that triggers people, and then because they're like, why did this happen? Why did this one thing happen to me? They start to look, and then they're like, oh, wow, this is actually happening from a criminal justice perspective or a surveillance perspective. You know, for me, it was is filming cops, you know.
Filming cops, or pretending to film them anyway, could wind up being Carla's biggest contribution to history. In 2010, Carla was following a friend through Ware, New Hampshire, when a squad car pulled up behind her. She pulled over next to the middle school, and the cop told her he was actually pulling over her friend in front.
The officer told me to leave, and I was like, well, I can't leave because I'm following them and I have no idea where I am. It's 11 o'clock at night. It's dark. You know, no, I'm going to stay here. But he really was a bit on edge, so something was weird.
At this point, Carla pulls out a video camera. She says she'd just gotten it for her birthday, and for some reason, she couldn't get it to record. But she got out of the car and started to pretend to film the police anyway. They told her to get back in her car, and then a second officer showed up and asked her where the camera was. She wouldn't tell him or hand over her license and registration.
So things escalated. I was arrested. The people in the car that I was following got arrested. And at the police station, the police officers refused to give me my camera, and they refused to give me a receipt to say they had taken my camera. And so I got a little stroppy. and that's when they decided to charge me with wiretapping. So that's
wiretapping?
Wiretapping for filming the police officer without his permission.
Remember, this was years before police stops were regularly being filmed on smartphones or by dash cam video. And for Carla, this experience of being told she could not document the actions of a police officer reaffirmed everything she knew about the state. And not just New Hampshire. I mean the very concept of a state.
Government is force. And what I mean by that is for every law we write, it is backed by the barrel of a gun. If you refuse to do whatever is in that piece of paper and you keep saying, I won't do it, someone will eventually show up at your house with a gun and make you do it.
It's a philosophy shared by many liberty-minded folks. Of course, how individuals should respond to that force and which laws they choose to follow or fight, that is not at all unanimous among free staters. Carla chose to fight her arrest by suing the town of Ware and the officers who had arrested her. Other free staters have chosen to fight budget increases at local town hall meetings. Some fight on social media. Others don't fight anything. They just get together, drink beers, and debate libertarianism. But in the Monadnock Valley, one particular group of free staters were attracting a lot of attention because they were fighting just about everything.
How did you get into libertarianism? I mean, like, was it stuff that you were thinking about from high school?
I smoked pot when I was 16 years old, and I think that probably opened my mind to the idea that the government was lying to me about things, and it turns out they lie about a lot of stuff.
This is Ian Freeman. That's Freeman as in free man, by the way. His real last name is Bernard. Ian is very wiry. He looks a bit like David Tennant from Doctor Who, if Doctor Who sported a goatee and a backwards hat. He's the main host of Free Talk Live, a nationally syndicated radio show and podcast that he started in 2002.
This is Free Talk Live. We are launching into another episode of fun and excitement. You can take control of the airwaves, bring up whatever's on your mind.
The topics range from guns to video games to public schools. The show is a couple hours or more every night, so there's nothing they won't touch.
What if they start deciding to go after the raw milk customers? And your wife decides she wants to have one more glass of raw milk, but she just gets caught up on the wrong end of a sting operation.
I think that
you don't think they would do a sting operation for raw milk? They just raided this guy for $30,000 worth of milk cheese.
Whatever the subject, the level of intensity on Free Talk Live pretty much remains a constant. In this episode, they talk about the arrest of a raw milk producer for about 20 minutes, enough to incense a caller to suggest it's time for revolution.
To rise out of the dirt and come out of their garages and away from their recliners and away from their remotes and put down their stupid beer can and get off their fat butt and get together and do something. And if that means something that could result in mass casualties, well, you know what? I think it's about time to do it.
Well, you know,
well,
I think
I don't
about
know if we're
this.
There yet.
Now, I was talking to my wife about this raw milk story today, and I was getting...
Talking about libertarianism for hours every night, it's no surprise that Ian had been following the Free State Project since the early days. And a few years in, he really liked what he was seeing, particularly in the town of Keene. In 2006, he took the leap, made the move, and also snagged a mutual sponsorship agreement with the Free State Project. They gave him free tickets to Porkfest and other events in return for a steady stream of free on-air promotion.
If I haven't made it crystal clear, a little bit can do a lot in New Hampshire, whereas a little bit does virtually nothing in other states. you just want to sit in your state and keep lamenting your sorrows as you continue to lose, fine. We'll be waiting for you up here when you're ready. I want to go to the phones here, Mark. I know you had something else, but let's go to Mark in Nevada. You're on Free Talk Live with Ian and Mark.
Hey, how are you gentlemen doing?
So around the time that Carla was first showing up to Porkfest or watching World Cup soccer, Ian was already stepping up his liberty activism in Keene. He and a gaggle of other Free Staters chalked libertarian messages on the city sidewalks. They gathered in state liquor stores and sang carols with libertarian lyrics.
Call the police.
One of Ian's friends, Rich Paul, organized a daily rally to smoke pot at the picturesque square at the center of town, right in the shadow of the United Church of Christ.
We smoke this in remembrance of lost liberty.
And they took the activism to court, too, refusing to stand for judges, filming inside the courthouse, and generally making enemies of city employees.
Sir, are you recording?
Yes, sir.
Not allowed to record here.
No, don't please.
Not allowed to record here, sir.
Well, this is, no, let's talk about
Turn
this.
Turn it off.
Under what order? Under what order are we going to do this?
And while all that attention helped get the name of the Free State Project in the news, a lot of the press wasn't very positive, which mattered to Carla because in 2011, she became the president of the Free State Project.
You know, I had a very short punch list of things I wanted to accomplish. One was to get the 20,000 people to sign up, to continue to encourage people to move to New Hampshire in the meanwhile, so to not wait. And the third one was, I was like, I want to meet Edward Snowden.
Both Carla and Ian signed the same pledge, to exert the fullest practical effort towards liberty. But I'm not sure they're on the same page about the meaning of the word practical.
It's difficult to have a movement of individualists. So, you know, I think the idea is everyone's kind of free to do what they want, but then the organization itself, so the Free State Project, Inc., is a brand, right? And it is an organization, and I'm on its board, and we have fiduciary duties, you know, and we know all of that stuff. And so over the years, I think we had to figure out, you know, what seems to be the tolerance for risk to the brand, what is tolerance for, you know, civil disobedience.
Of all the stunts that Free Keene pulled, the one that's probably gotten the most attention is something called Robin Hooding. A handful of activists, including Ian, would feed expired parking meters to prevent meter readers from handing out tickets. It's the sort of thing my mom used to do, and on its face, it sounds pretty awesome. Until you've seen the footage.
Follow you wherever you go. You're not going to get away with it today.
You take money from people by force. Why do you behave this way? I don't think that's an appropriate thing for people to do to each other.
I'd like you to stop following me around.
No, you can.
Nobody likes what you do.
In a lot of these videos, two or three Free Staters surround the meter readers as they walk. Sometimes in silence, sometimes it gets heated. They're like weird reverse bodyguards.
Oh, you're actually
following me
around
right now. You around right now to let you know how it feels. You like it?
I don't really mind.
You don't care?
I don't know. Good footage.
Good footage because you're a knucklehead. And you like to hassle.
Now, while all this was going on, Carla was engaging in a more conventional brand of activism. She protested the city of Concord's purchase of an armored military vehicle called a Bearcat. She wrote pro-liberty op-eds to the major New Hampshire newspapers. And in 2014, she settled her lawsuit with the town of Ware. It went all the way to the First Circuit Court of Appeals, which means the case set a court precedent in favor of First Amendment rights to film law enforcement. Given the growing public anger over the unarmed shootings of young black men, this should have been the FSP's biggest victory of the year and a compelling argument for why a largely white movement might actually be good for minorities. But just a couple months later, Free Keene managed to overshadow that attention by getting Robin Hooding in the national spotlight too, this time on Comedy Central's Colbert Report.
The Free Keene Squad are tonight's difference makers. And just to be clear, are huge douchebags.
We'll be right back.
It's just funny. It's just people being made fun of. And, you know, what's interesting, some of the response to that from some libertarians was like, you guys are ruining the movement. I can't tell you how many times I've been told that.
After a couple of the meter readers in Keene decided to quit, saying they couldn't stand the constant confrontation, the city decided they'd had enough, and they sued Ian and a couple of the other Robin Hooders in hopes of forcing them to back off. But as it turned out, the Robin Hooders had the law on their side. The city of Keene lost the suit.
In their public press releases and interviews with the media, it was just straight up lies, because if they had any evidence...
Even if Robin Hooders never broke the law, it's hard to talk to Ian about something like this and not feel like you're living in a parallel dimension. Lots of people get angry about parking tickets. I have.
But how many people consider it a form of oppression?
If anybody's doing threatening, it's the people who are working for the government. And that was always, you know, one of the points of some of the Robin Hooders in the streets was, you guys are the ones who are stealing. You're the ones who are threatening. Whenever you leave a ticket on somebody's car, that's a threat.
I'm hesitant to group Free Staters together for nearly any reason. But I will say that most of them ascribe to something called the non-aggression principle. To sum up, it's basically an ethical position that says that violence or threatening violence against a person or their property is inherently wrong. Self-defense, however, is a natural right should someone else aggress against you. But watching videos from Keene, you get the feeling that some libertarians, like Ian, feel as though they are under constant threat. And that feeling justifies an attitude of constant vigilance, of perpetual angry self-defense. An attitude that for Carla and company wasn't looking very on brand. But who is in charge of that brand? Nearly everybody I spoke to from the Free State Project described the movement as leaderless or bottom-up. But like Carla said, there is a board of directors and actual leaders like Jason Sorens, the founder, and Carla. They did have the power to kick people out, and they have in the past. But shy of endorsing violence or bigotry, the non-aggression principle, the very philosophy that provides the movement its backbone, is also what makes it nearly impossible for the leaders of the FSP to assert any authority over the group. This ability to hold strong to your principles of individualism, even in the face of behavior you find distasteful, to many, that's what makes you a true libertarian.
So if you believe in property rights, then you should believe that the property owner or the bar owner has the right to say this establishment is a smoking or a non-smoking establishment. And if you don't like smoke, don't go there. It's very simple. Now, the unfortunate thing is that means in a scenario with racism, maybe someone would say, I'm going to open a blacks only bar. No white people allowed here. They should be allowed to do that. It sounds horrible, but if we're going to stick to the principles, and if we stick to those principles from start to finish, the entire world would be a better place because at least we would all know what the rules are.
The first thing to point out here is that Carla is in fact white, and statistically, so are most libertarians. It's also worth pointing out that this really shows how hard it is to characterize Free Staters. Because central to their ideology is a squeamishness about declaring any ideas out of bounds. Even so, the movement was trying to attract followers, and Ian wasn't making it easy for leadership of the FSP. He criticized the board for kicking people out, both on air and off, and he even made his own splinter group, the Shire Society, which, as far as I can tell, is just the Free State Project with no official leadership.
The Shire Society was formed to not have a board of directors, to not have a centralized control.
As it turns out, though, there is a line, aside from advocating violence, over which Ian could not cross. And like a lot of big news for the Free State Project, it happened in 2016. That was the year that Carla achieved her dream of meeting Edward Snowden, who appeared as a speaker via Skype from Russia at the Free State Project's other official event, the New Hampshire Liberty Forum.
Put your mask up. Put your mask up, please.
Carla was in the front row, holding back tears and holding a mask of Snowden's face.
I look forward to seeing you in New Hampshire.
It was also the year that the Free State Project reached its goal of collecting 20,000 signatures.
Today, I'm here to announce that the Free State Project has officially triggered the move and that participants need to come home. You have 5 years from today, February 3rd, 2016, to come help build the world's first intentional liberty community.
And that was the year that two petitions started circulating online. Both of them wanted Ian out of power. One of them, called People Against Pedophile Defenders, featured a clip from Free Talk Live. And a quick word of warning before we play it. This gets very uncomfortable very quickly.
Phones instead. Joe is listening in New York. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Joe.
Hi, this is Joe from New York. I have a question for Ian.
Yes, Joe.
Why do you on occasion seem to imply that sexual contact between children and adults is acceptable?
Well, I think that people can consent to the behavior they would like to engage in.
What do you believe the age of consent to be?
I think that it's whenever you're able to make that that decision for yourself.
So in other words, according to you, say, I don't know, a six-year-old, they could consent they could decide to consent to sexual contact with an adult.
I think that it's really, while I might find that reprehensible personally, it's really none of my business.
So you don't think that would be a crime?
I can tell you, sir, that I engaged in sexual contact with somebody who was 16 when I was 10, and
I was 11.
People would call whatever. I don't remember exactly what year it happened, but I was pretty darn young, and I was fully able to make that decision for myself. Would you call that a crime?
Absolutely, of course, it's a crime.
Why?
Children don't have the developmental ability to consent. I mean, that is just a clear, obvious fact, and it's simply disturbing that you wouldn't understand that. But I have an idea on why you might not, and that's because many abuse victims, due to the psychological trauma of the abuse, make up excuses for their abuser and basically blame themselves.
Oh, no, I don't feel like I was abused. I consented. You understand that? See, this is what's very insulting to me, that you can sit there and say, well, yours were too young. You didn't know what the hell you were doing. You're 10 years old. You can't make those decisions. That was illegal what happened. That was a crime. And I'm telling you, Joe, that I absolutely knew what I was doing. I made the choice to climb out of my window at night. I made the choice to climb in his window. And I made the choice to engage in the activities I engaged in. Not him. He didn't force me into it.
However you might feel about that clip, you should know that it was recorded in 2010. Members of the Free State Project had known about Ian's views on age of consent for years, but until 2016, nothing was done about it. About 4 weeks after officially triggering the move, though, the FSP put out a statement. They acknowledged that Ian had likely convinced more people to move to New Hampshire than any other single individual. They also said they couldn't risk having the Free State Project associated with discussions about age of consent. So they ended the mutual sponsorship and kicked him out. Ian was no longer welcome at Porkfest or other FSP events. And the timing was notable, because 3 days later, the FBI raided Ian's home on suspicion that somebody living there had been downloading child pornography.
Residents there say about 10 computers were seized. That's where Ian Freeman...
Charges have never been handed down. The equipment, save a camera, has never been returned. Ian is still host of Free Talk Live, and yes, there have been some on-air conspiracy theories batted around about what might have led to the raid. But regardless, ever since then, Free Keen has been a whole lot quieter. But just to show you how hard it is for the Free State Project to control its brand, Ian continues to pursue liberty however he sees fit, with his own splinter group, the Shire Society. They're even holding their own summertime festival, just 1 week before Porkfest.
They got all kinds of big-name speakers that they can afford to pay. And our event, if you want to speak, you're going to have to bring your own podium, or you're going to have to bring your own PA system, or whatever. So, you know, will anybody be speaking? I have no idea. I'm not in charge.
Ian is calling his festival Forkfest, as in forked off from Porkfest. But he says you can call it whatever you want. It doesn't have a board of directors to tell you otherwise.
Part 3 of our show on the Free State Project. After a short break, this is Word of Mouth. I'm Virginia Prescott, and this is Word of Mouth from NHPR. Your questions answered, your state explored. Today, we're spending the entire show trying to answer a single complicated question posed to our Only in New Hampshire series. What is the Free State Project? So far, producer Taylor Quimby brought us through the movement's origins and some of its messy growing pains. Up next, he'll explore how the FSP is being integrated into New Hampshire culture and politics. Here's producer Taylor Quimby.
So let's just go ahead and address some myths and contradictions. Free Staters are both incredibly organized and incredibly independent. Through a spiderweb of forums and Facebook pages, they help new movers unpack, find apartments and jobs. They give tours to prospective signers, have a cornucopia of Twitter handles, regular movie nights, a community center in Manchester, nicknamed The Quill. There are FSP real estate agencies that accept Bitcoin, custom crafters of rifles, Free State-owned bars like Murphy's in Manchester, Free State lawyers, Free State nonprofits. There are even Free Staters that work for the government. And they're just as diverse on the ideological spectrum, too. There are traditional libertarians, anarchists, minarchists, crypto-anarchists, anarcho-Christians, and anarcho-capitalists. Each one has a Wikipedia page, so look them up if you're curious. And if you thought the Free State Project was a migration of flatlanders, think again. Of the 4,300-plus Free Staters currently living in New Hampshire, I've been told that as many as 3,000 are native Granite Staters who signed on to the project without having to move an inch. So what exactly does the label Free Stater really tell you? Not much, says Manchester State Representative Elizabeth Edwards.
It tells you that they take their beliefs seriously enough to pick up their lives and move somewhere, which is interesting information. And it tells you that they are skeptical about government power. But it doesn't really tell you anything else because there is so much variety.
I was having trouble getting a hold of Elizabeth until one of her colleagues told me to text her through an encrypted messaging app.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're one of the cool kids now.
Elizabeth, like Carla, has kind of a lefty vibe. And now into her second term, the left is technically where you'll find her.
I decided to run for office as a Democrat for a few different reasons, one of them being that I'm married to a woman and I didn't feel like that I wanted to be part of a party where the most important part of my life was like contradicted by the party platform. That just seemed really like it would be a super uncomfortable situation for me to be in.
In 2006, the first Free State Project participant was elected in the New Hampshire House of Representatives. By 2012, there were 12 Free Staters in the House. Right now, there are 17 that we know of. Elizabeth moved to New Hampshire in 2011. And what's remarkable is that she isn't the only Free Stater in her family. Her dad ran for office as a Republican just 2 years after she did.
And you can kind of see from comparing our voting records that the term Free Stater doesn't have that much predictive power because we voted the same on 32% of the bills last year.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, although I think that you might be more of an outlier than he is.
Yes, I agree with that.
Both Carla Garrick and Jason Sorens told me about the Edwards family, probably because they're a testament to the political diversity of the Free State Project. And while I think that is in part true, if you're looking at the community as a whole, the majority of Free Staters elected into public office are much closer to the libertarian stereotype: white, wealthy, secular, and male. And for what it's worth, all but two of them are registered Republicans.
I think that we have a natural home, personally I think this, in the Republican Party, at least in the roots of the Republican Party.
This is Keith Ammon, a representative for Hillsborough's 40th District. Keith is a big guy, big beard, but incredibly earnest. He's the sort of person that might fall silent halfway through a sentence because he's so deep in thought.
You know, I guess I was in my, let's see, how old was I then? I mean, mid-30s, something like that. But I started thinking about, you know, what do I believe? What are my core convictions?
The Libertarian Party officially holds 4 seats in state legislatures in the entire country. By comparison, just here in New Hampshire, the Free State Project has succeeded in holding at least 17 seats. They've done that by running not as official libertarians, but instead on Democratic or Republican tickets. That means New Hampshire is a petri dish for a political ideology that up until now was mostly academic. Which begs the question, how do libertarians actually govern?
What is government for? Is it to solve every ill, and is it to make everyone happy? I mean, is that the purpose of government? And, you know, when you think about it to any length, that becomes actually a dangerous thought, to think that government is the cure for every ill.
It seems like a simple question and a pretty good guiding philosophy for how to vote. But consistently voting in favor of more liberty is actually pretty tricky. Take abortion, for example.
Libertarians can disagree on that because they focus on whose rights are being violated or whose rights are being protected. And so if you focus on the mother's rights, then you might be more pro-choice. If you focus on the rights of the fetus, the unborn baby, what your label is for it, you might be more pro-life.
In other words, sometimes one individual's liberty impedes on another's. And with this kind of tricky decision-making, it's no surprise that some libertarians need a little help figuring out how to vote. That's why Keith chairs an organization that rates bills in the House and Senate.
Basically a cheat sheet for when the bills come to the House.
And the rating system is up or down. Bills are either pro or anti-liberty. So let's do a quick test, shall we? A bill increasing privacy rights for genetic data? Pro-liberty. A bill requiring companies to pay fired employees for their unused vacation time? Anti-liberty. A bill repeals prohibitions on carrying guns while riding snowmobiles? Well, that's a no-brainer. But his group doesn't rate every bill, and I was surprised to find that Keith and a number of other Republican Free Staters supported tougher voter registration laws, for example. I would have guessed anti-liberty on that one. And when I asked Keith about immigration and border security, well, you can imagine how tough that one is.
But when you have mass migration movements, I mean, you have to kind of disconnect from philosophically. This is tricky. I'm still working through this. In my voting, I'm going to favor more freedom of movement generally. But when you're there and you actually have to look at the bill and push the button, like it's not an easy thing to do, to like parse every bill and be consistent.
The ideologically driven libertarians don't always make it easy for their adopted party. Free state legislators make up about half of a newly formed coalition that in 2017 stymied Republican efforts to pass a budget, a sort of Tea Party moment in the New Hampshire legislature. But one thing is for sure, the Republican Free Staters have an easier time blending in than the Democrats.
The libertarians occasionally treat me like a traitor, and a good number of Democrats have no idea what to make of me.
Representative Elizabeth Edwards told me that by the time she won her first primary, the responsibility of being a representative, of really being responsible for constituents out there, started to weigh on her shoulders.
I mean, you're talking about like your convictions changing even while you're campaigning, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it was. It's been really hard. It made me think, like, what am I even doing here?
Elizabeth is still outside what you might call the mainstream. She sponsored a bill in hopes of decriminalizing sex work, for example. But on issues like climate change, she is voting further along the progressive spectrum. And she's not necessarily opposed to things like taxing carbon.
All of my libertarian friends would be like, are you crazy? Taxation is theft. You know, they wouldn't. they really don't understand.
Libertarians are tribal, she says, just like every other group out there, no matter how much importance they place on the individual.
A lot of my friends are Free Staters, and, you know, I want them to be happy. But at the same time, if the Free State Project means that a lot of people who don't vaccinate their kids move here and it causes, like, outbreaks of vaccine-preventable illnesses, then in that sense, I definitely don't want the Free State Project to succeed. It's like, so, so the kind of success makes a difference, in my opinion.
With either of the two major political parties, it's pretty easy to figure out who is in office. But with Free Staters, it actually takes some digging. Zandra Rice Hawkins is executive director of Granite State Progress, a left-leaning lobbying group which runs a website called Free State Project Watch. Every year, they put out a list of Free State Project candidates who are running for and elected to office. Keith told me that there was people you left off, and I don't know if he was being coy.
Oh, he didn't share any names?
No.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if there are individuals who are serving who are members of the Free State Project that we don't know about.
The logo on the website is a little red porcupine set over an image of New Hampshire. But the shadow of the porcupine, which stretches ominously upwards, reveals the black, Halloween-esque silhouette of a fox. It looks like a piece of Cold War propaganda. And in a way, FSP Watch has been waging a Cold War against the FSP since 2009. That's because historically, Free State Project members running for office haven't always divulged their libertarian roots to the public, even though they tend to run as Republicans or Democrats. This secret strategy of working inside the established parties rather than running as libertarians, it actually goes all the way back to Jason Soren's original ideas about how the Free State Project could take over state politics. That's why Zandra has taken to outing Free State Project candidates for nearly a decade.
What we ask is, why did you move to New Hampshire? And if you moved because you signed a pledge to a political organization and that is your sole purpose for moving here, then that doesn't leave a lot of room for us to have a gray area. I mean, you either are a member of the Free State Project or you're not.
It's a question that rubs Carla Garrick the wrong way, which isn't surprising. Carla stepped down from the Free State Project after triggering the move in 2016, and right now she's running for state senate in Goffstown.
Doesn't really sit well with me. It seems very McCarthy-esque. You know, it's sort of like, I mean, I could break down the Democratic Party into all kinds of little nuanced groups, you know, or, you know, maybe I'll send out a thing that asks, you know, are you a socialist?
This Cold War between the Free Staters and Granite State Progress, it's led to some incredibly uncomfortable public chest pounding. Zandra does a presentation to communities around the state called FSP Exposed. Her presentation is available for download, but not on her own website. It's on freekeen.com.
It's always really interesting. We did a presentation out in Rockingham County last spring. We had about 100 people in the room, 20 of whom were Free Staters. Half of them identified themselves at the beginning when we asked people to stand up. The other half didn't.
Zandra doesn't care about the non-aggression principle or the idea that the FSP is a leaderless movement. To her, the group will never shed its origins, that the Free State Project was started as a secessionist movement, a narrative that Free Staters like to push back against, in some cases, in person.
I would love to let you continue with that particular fallacy because it is so ridiculous, but these people should not be lied to.
Thank you. Did you introduce yourself at the beginning as a Free State Project member when I asked for people to...
I have a list of 57 names, card-carrying members of... Socialist Party, Communist Party.
I just want to make
you are distracting people from issues by trying to pigeonhole a group of people.
I give a lot of credit to the Free State Project for being so organized. I do, but it does terrify me about what their end goal is.
Like the Free State Project itself, the language of Free State Project Watch can be hyperbolic. They routinely refer to the FSP as an ultra-extreme group, which I find redundant. Zandra dismisses charity efforts by Free Staters as ploys to win over the public. Their community center, the Quill, she talks about it like it's a secret spy headquarters. But you can see why Zandra and her team have gone full conspiracy theory on the FSP, especially on the subject of secession. Since stepping down from the Free State Project, Carla Garrick has taken up the leadership of another nonprofit, the New Hampshire Foundation for Independence. I'll let you take a stab at what the group is aiming for.
Its basic mission is to educate Granite Staters about the advantages of New Hampshire possibly peacefully separating from the U.S. government.
For years, the Free State Project has been trying to emphasize that it is not a secessionist movement. So I just couldn't understand why, politically, Carla would risk fanning those flames and blurring the line even further.
You know, Zandra's going to say what she's going to say. You know, she fails to mention that she moved to New Hampshire for her political purposes, came as someone who wants to institute progressive socialist policies in New Hampshire. And so, yeah, I do have a concern that it adds fuel to the fire because we have to have this discussion. On the other hand, I also welcome the discussion as long as people can understand these are different hats and these are different things and these are different approaches.
Different hats. I get that. But I asked Jason Sorens, the founder and current board chair of the FSP, how many participants does he think are in favor of secession? He said it's probably about an even split, 50-50. And I'm not sure Zandra would find that very comforting. When the Libertarian Party was still brand new in the early 70s, there was a convention in Dallas, Texas. The party was threatening to split, with a minority of members wanting to go full anarchy in the platform language, and the majority arguing that that was political suicide. I'm telling you this story because it shows that even for a third party, unrestricted by conventional politics, there is this question: where do we compromise our ideals in exchange for a shot at success? With the Free State Project, founder Jason Sorens seems to have done the impossible by inviting a group of people who can simultaneously have both. Since the FSP triggered the move, the mainstream media outlets haven't had much reason to pay attention to the group. But one by one, Free Staters are continuing to move to New Hampshire, and the biggest changes are likely yet to come.
there's no utopia at the end of the tunnel, which, you know, we should have known from the beginning, right? It's there are no utopias in the world. That's what it means. And all we can hope to do is to stimulate more conversation and hopefully help make the state a better place.
The question is, a better place for whom? At some point, while I was working on this story, a colleague said something that struck me. That the Free State Project is so fascinating, in part, because it has an aspect of the classic immigrant story. I'm not so sure I would go that far. But I'm also not convinced that their political infighting, tactical campaigns, and struggle to herd a divided coalition makes the Free State Project ultra-extreme. If anything, it just makes them more like Republicans and Democrats. Which is to say, you should probably be paying them more attention. Especially because, in a leaderless movement, it's not always clear who's accountable.
This episode was produced by Taylor Quimby, with help from Jimmy Gutierrez, Hannah McCarthy, Justine Paradise, Rita Green, Robert Garova, Sam Evans-Brown, and Corey Princell. Erica Janik is our executive producer. Maureen McMurray is director of Hanging Her Coat Up in the Closet. Music in this episode from Blue Dot Sessions, Poddington Bear, and Ari De Niro. I'm Virginia Prescott. Word of Mouth is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.